share with you my story, would you share your...
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. It's 12:11. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is the producer. We're 18 stories above the Chicago River. Here's my bright side. I will add one more on to the last segment we did before the news and the Wintrust Business Lunch. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day downtown Chicago. I hope you have a chance to have a great weekend and a safe and smart one, too. We start out with Paul Nolte today. He is the wealth manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Visit kingsview.com. Welcome back, Paul. How are you today?
Oh, very well. Nice to be back with you, John.
Markets are up a little bit, in fact, quite a bit. In fact, if you take the week, we touched record highs on all the indices, didn't we?
Yeah, it's been one of those. It was a very strange week, though, as far as how we got here. We got the news early in the week. Pfizer and Moderna have a vaccine. So we saw a huge rally in the economically sensitive parts of the market, the financials, the industrials, et cetera, and technology sold off pretty dramatically. But as we get into Wednesday and Thursday, people are looking at the COVID cases and going, holy cow, we're at record high levels and a lot of hospitalizations. We have a long way to go till we get to actually getting the vaccine out in the public. And so technology rallied, the financial sold off, and the industrial sold off. And we've got a little bit of a rally here today and a little bit of everything. And I think everybody is feeling, at least from Wall Street's perspective, better that there's a light at the end of the tunnel right now, even though that light may be not until first, maybe second quarter next year.
When you say that, are you speaking just about people getting well, or are you talking about real financial stability and jobs coming back?
Well, it's a little bit of both. You know, we've been talking about having a stimulus package. That's getting bogged down in Congress, and it's not going to be effective until people are willing to go out to the ballgame, to museums, to a theater. And that may not come until we get an effective vaccine, which the general population may not see until spring or summer. So I think there's that anticipation, and Wall Street always operates off of anticipated news,
yeah,
more so than what's happening today. So the anticipation is things will be much better by summertime next year.
The Fed chairman said that when we do recover, we'll be recovering to a different economy than the one we had. What's he talking about there?
I think what he's talking about is there's a lot of companies have recognized the fact that we don't all need to be in the office 24/7 and that we need to be there all the time, and we can do this from home. So we're going to have maybe not as much real estate needed for office space. We're seeing a lot of people moving out of city centers, moving to suburbia. We're seeing shifts in how people go about doing the business that they do. So as we go back to quote-unquote normal,
Yeah. There's
going to be a permanent shift in a lot of things that happen and how we go about doing things. We see it just in going out today. You're getting your temperature tested as you go into a restaurant or, you know, some of those types of things. Those may be with us for a lot longer than I think many people think today.
Well, if the economy changes, though, the way we do business or the kind of the businesses that operate, is it a zero-sum game? Sort of like the fact that you don't use maybe as much gas in cars, but what do you know, electric cars are picking up, and so we transfer one set of jobs or needs to another area. Too bad for people that have commercial real estate, but good for the people that are doing office expansions in homes, right? So that it's not a total loss.
Well, but see, the same people aren't going to be necessarily employed. So, you know, those that are working in the offices downtown aren't necessarily going to come to your home office and do the cleaning and, you know, take out the garbage and that type of thing. So those positions will be lost. And I don't know, you know, that's that transition where you're going to have unemployment rates remain fairly high for quite some time, until people figure out what jobs they can do. So there's that shift that goes on that will leave a fair amount of people behind until we're able to figure out what can we do. So and where can we be employed? Are restaurants going to come back at 100% capacity? Again, we're not quite sure how we get there. And there's a lot that's going to be painful between now and that point. And that's part of the reason for the stimulus package, where my contention has been that if I put those dollars in your pocket but you have no place to spend it, it's not going to help the economy until you have a place to go spend those dollars.
Paul Nolte's on a phone, wealth manager at Kingsview Asset Management. What are you seeing in the jobs numbers? Any positive trends, or is it still bad?
Well, there are positive trends. The weekly jobless claims numbers have continued to come down. They're not coming down at the pace that we'd like to see, but they're still coming down. The unemployment number that came out last week was pretty good. Some of the quick data that we're looking at, how many people are making reservations, how many people are going through TSA checkpoints, those types of things have really kind of flattened out, in some cases turned down a little bit. And it's not a surprise if we listen to the news about, you know, what are we doing in Illinois, what are other states doing, and they're talking about shutting down parts of the economy or really encouraging you to stay in place.
Yeah.
That, I think, is going to be with us for a while. And so we're anticipating a slow spot here, probably until we get to February, March. And it's going to be a tough winter, I think, economically, until we get back into the summer months. And by that time, hopefully, we'll have the vaccine available as well.
My friend Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute mentioned yesterday that Illinois led the nation in jobs lost from September to October. And that may be a number of things, but maybe one of the things is just how strict and regulated we've been trying to beat the virus. So we are really paying the price. And hopefully the payback will be that, you know, we'll be liberated sooner or more fully than other places. But it's tough in Illinois right now, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, if you want to look at a model, that would be New York back in March and April. You know, they really shut down. They came out in much better shape, but they're also seeing a lot of pickup now in a lot of their cases. And both the governor as well as the mayor of New York City are talking about additional measures or closing restaurants early, et cetera. And certainly when you're talking Chicago, you're talking New York, we're still flying, and there are still flights that are coming in from a lot of different places that have that potential to transmit the virus. Again, people are moving about. We are still people. We are still very social animals. And it is a flu virus, and it is something that I think is going to be with us, even with the vaccine. It's going to be with us for a long time. It's not anything that we're going to be able to get rid of. It's going to be something that we're going to have to learn how to deal with over the next few years.
Paul Nolte, Wealth Manager, Kingsview Asset Management. Okay, Paul, thanks for your time today. We always appreciate your thoughts. We'll visit again.
Thank you so much, John. Take care.
His website is kingsview.com. 2 days ago, Bill Rancic was on. He's got a new pizza joint. You've recognized the name Bill Rancic in Chicago for a while now. His latest venture is Bill's Original Tavern Pizza. And is it on Clark? Or is it over on Randolph? Anyway, he's got this pizza place. They're delivering throughout Chicago. 317 North Clark. Yeah, 317 North Clark. They just sent some over. I'm not doing a commercial for them, but that's good tavern-style pizza. It's the thin crust, the sweet sauce on it. The sauce reminds me it's tomato sauce with a little bit of a sweetness to it, like Aurelio's might have. But it's a thinner crust. He sent over a little pepperoni one. It's gone. We devoured it, but that is excellent, excellent. Tavern-style pizza, Bill's Original. Thanks, Bill, and congratulations. I will endorse it. Let's visit next with Nelly Vasquez-Roland, who is the president and co-founder of a Safe Haven Foundation. Visit safehaven.org. Nelly, welcome to WGN Radio. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm glad that you guys are doing what you're doing. Describe the service, first of all, that you all provide.
Oh, where should I start? We do multiple types of services, and we are known for being an anchor organization serving the homeless. And what we do is we provide transitional housing, behavioral health care services, educational services, job training services, and access to jobs and permanent housing. So you know, to do that, we actually own businesses, which are known as social enterprises. So most people know our trucks. You know, we just recently finished planting the tulips on Michigan Avenue that are so famous. So we do the medians throughout the Chicagoland area, as well as a lot of private work. And that's an opportunity to give people, you know, an opportunity to get back to work that have been out of the workforce for a while. And then we also have buildings, affordable housing, senior housing, veteran housing. Right now, we just did a groundbreaking for a 90-unit veteran housing project that we built, that we're building in North Lawndale, which is making it, you know, 40 real estate developments throughout the Chicagoland area. And we're also doing one in Hobart, Indiana, that's funded by HUD. It's called the Rauner Family Veteran Studios by Ace Cleveland Foundation. And, you know, recently we were able to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic by standing up a medical respite. So we did this for people that are testing positive for COVID-19 and need a place to go to isolate, that are asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic. And we did that in partnership with Rush and CDPH. So, you know, that's a little bit of what we're doing right now.
Otherwise, not much. So, and so this place where you will house people that are recovering from COVID, is that a new facility or an area you have that you've kind of segregated? How does that work?
Well, we happen to have space available. We had a tenant in our 140,000-square-foot headquarters in North Lawndale move out, and we were converting the space to an outpatient behavioral health care center. And when COVID happened, we realized that it was a very, very important for us to have a resource for people that, you know, were COVID positive, especially those who were on shelter, very vulnerable to go to. So we, you know, we just met with Rush and, you know, we got together and said, let's do a medical respite. These people have to go somewhere. You know, when you talk about sheltering in place, there's nowhere for them to go. So it was a great, great opportunity to help people that were in crisis, but, you know, we don't want them to be in the hospital if they're asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic. So this was a great alternative, and it has been a phenomenal success, way beyond our expectations.
What about fundraising for you all? How are you doing on that?
Well, we just kicked off yesterday a press conference to announce our end-of-the-year fundraising challenge. And, you know, my heart goes out to the small businesses right now, because we are seeing the aftermath of these small businesses that are closing because of the COVID pandemic, as their employees are running out of money and knocking on my door. I believe that it's so important to help those small businesses get back in business as quickly as possible. So yesterday we made an announcement that we are partnering with the Small Business Advocacy Council and ACAP, and we launched a challenge called Rebuilding Lives and Businesses. And our goal is to give people an opportunity to give to both, you know, small business advocacy and to help the homeless, or to either one of the causes. But I believe that this is a virtuous partnership and a virtuous cycle, you know, that one cannot exist without the other. You know, if you don't have jobs, how can you help people get back into the workforce and vice versa? So I think that this is really unique. It's very exciting. It's the first time ever we talk about, you know, breaking down silos. I think this is a real example of how we can all work together to help each other, you know, help our financial situation and help the people that are falling through the cracks all get back to where they need to be, and that is to, you know, their highest level of independence and back to where they were pre-COVID. So this is, you know, exciting. You can visit the website, asaphaven.org. We're going to link up to this this campaign and this challenge for people to learn more about it. And you can always go to our social media page and learn more about it as well, asaphaven Foundation.
Yeah. I have less than a minute left, but then would this be grants for businesses or individuals? Would they apply for funds? How would you use these monies?
Oh, well, the money is going to go for asaphaven's purposes to cover the cost of housing and feeding the people that are, you know, coming to asaphaven. So that's going to be a direct, you know, 87 cents of every dollar goes straight to services at asaphaven. And SBAC is going to have their own processes, mainly to help fund a lot of the advocacy work that they've been doing on policy issues. and also to help some businesses that may need some assistance. And, you know, I'll let them, you know, describe what that looks like on their end. But, you know, I believe that, you know, both efforts are absolutely necessary right now. And these are the voices that aren't being heard. You know, I mean, the people that are falling through the cracks that aren't going to be able to make rent payments once that moratorium lifts. You know, there's a prediction that there's going to be an increase of homelessness by about 40%. And that's a scary thought because there has not been an increase in the number of homeless beds in our city. So for those of us that are on the front lines, we're already being inundated with calls. And, you know, many of them from the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic and job loss. But some of the things that we're also seeing is an increase in the opiate epidemic by the tune of 100% increase, as well as alcoholism. You know, and you talked about that in your previous call about, you know, the anxiety levels, you know, being so high. So at Safe Haven, we're grateful to be responding, you know, on many levels, but we can't do it alone. And what's exciting, too, is a lot of businesses are also setting up fundraisers and drives for us. So Rotary, for example, is doing a drive for hygiene kits. So, you know, for us, so there's a lot of things happening in the community that people are coming up with ways to help.
Nelly Vasquez Rowland, president and co-founder of that Safe Haven Foundation. A Safe Haven is all you got to remember. asafehaven.org. You find out more and make a donation through that portal. asafehaven.org. Nelly, good job. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. Be safe.
that's the idea. Wintrust Business Lunch continues. Back on the Wintrust Business Lunch, 1236 on WGN Radio. And Scott Bono joins us now. Scott, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking at a report that you guys did. And by the way, Scott, I just put down the piece of paper with the name of your company on there, and Pete's going to kick me in the teeth. You're from Indeed, right?
That's right.
Yeah, here's the report prepared by Indeed. Talk to me a little bit about some of the things that you guys came up with. I find a lot of this fascinating. Let me share a couple of my favorites. Workers remain remote due to the COVID-19. 79% of employees say they have adjusted to working from home. 78% of us actually say we have adjusted to working from home. And despite being home, 73% of employees are in agreement that they are able to maintain a daily routine despite working from home. But 63% say they find themselves working more due to not taking breaks during the day. This report goes on like that. This but that, this but that, this but that. When did you conduct the survey and who is included in it?
Yeah, so over the last several months, we conducted a survey of over 800 people who are employed in the U.S. to try to get a sense for how they feel about working remotely due to COVID and what their transition to remote work has been. And you're seeing the results of some of the interesting pieces we found in this study.
Generally, what would you say? I mean, maybe I've kind of killed your lead there a little bit, but it sounds like people are managing, are being productive.
Yeah, so as you pointed out, almost 80% of people said that they've adjusted at this point to working from home. And, you know, while, you know, 60%+ of folks say that they do find themselves working a little bit more, we also have found, you know, some other interesting surprises in there. Like, you know, 50% of people say that they miss their commute. You know, they're saving some money maybe on their commute, but they were using that time to listen to news or speak with family members or just sort of transition between work and home. There were a bunch of interesting, you know, other tidbits in there around things like, you know, the impact of having a dedicated workspace on what someone's sort of fulfillment from working from home looks like. So folks with a dedicated workspace feel much better about their performance at home compared to those that don't.
Yeah. How do people feel about the loss of interaction with fellow employees?
Yeah, this was a big point. You know, almost 75% of people said that they are missing in-person socialization with coworkers. And one of the things that we have been trying to emphasize to employers is look for ways to create socialization opportunities, whether that's, you know, Zoom happy hours or, you know, one of the things that Indeed does is Zoom-based, you know, yoga classes and things like that. Just some way to get people moving and interacting even virtually in a way that doesn't really have anything to do with work, but is more focused on sort of social and mental well-being.
did people comment on? Are they spending more money or saving more money? What are they doing with the money? Again, we're talking about people that are fortunate enough to still be working and making money. What are they saying about their finances?
Yeah, the survey doesn't speak necessarily too much to that, except for maybe around commute. So, you know, certainly folks that have been able to cut their commute out entirely are saving money there. But it comes at the trade-off of, you know, time that you may have been able to spend transitioning. You now are spending time working. One other element along those lines is for working parents. So, you know, almost 75% of working parents said that they're anticipating having to cut back on work hours to accommodate having their children home from school, and another more than 60% cited having their children home from school as a major complication trying to manage both, family care and work responsibilities during this time.
I walked through Nordstrom the other day and noticed that they normally have suits for, fancy dress or business attire. They had sweaters or jackets and sweaters. And I talked to the guy and I said, it's more casual. He goes, yeah, people aren't buying clothes to go to the office. I suppose we're saving money that way. I suppose it's hard on the businesses that sell business attire, right?
Yeah, I expect that's probably true. And one of the things that I think has been interesting about this, this time from a work perspective is that I think the future of work is going to be different. You know, even once we're able to socially gather and have workplaces, sort of more like we've been used to, historically, the norms have changed. You know, one of the things that's definitely true, and we see this both in the study and in the broader economic data, is that employers are finding ways and employees are finding ways to be productive, absent the traditional office work environment. And I think we're going to see an evolution of what the workplace looks like. And, that is going to manifest itself in how offices are configured and how people meet and business travel, but certainly also in ways like, business fashion and what's expected in terms of attire and the like.
Yeah. Indeed's Vice President of Global Talent Attraction, HR Analytics and HR Technology, Scott Bono's on the line. Indeed.com is where you go to find out more about all of this. By the way, how then have people transformed their homes into offices? Do they have the right printers and computers? And I don't know what you have at an office, but there's a lot of technology at work. Have they put that stuff in their homes?
Yeah, we're seeing that. So what we've seen based on the study was an average of almost $600 that people have been spending to create a home office. But unfortunately, we're seeing only about 27% of folks reported that their employer provided them with a stipend to cover some of those costs, with about 18% being reimbursed in full. So I think you can definitely see that people are attempting to create some semblance of a functional and lasting work environment in their home office spaces now.
One last thing. Did you all ask about the relationship between the employer and the employee? Is it better? Is it worse? Is it the same as a result of us working from home?
We're definitely seeing a mix, and I do think one of the things that has been a constant a piece of feedback that we've been hearing both in this study and what we've been looking at in some of the other research that Indeed has been doing over the course of the last 9 months is the importance of keeping work human. Right now, it's just so easy to become disconnected or feel disengaged from our teams or our employers or our employees if we're not finding ways to connect regularly. And so, prioritizing fun activities and ways to connect on a human level is one of the things that we are seeing sort of separating employers that are seeing good and high employee engagement right now from those that might be struggling in those areas.
Yeah. Send your employees a pizza, right? Like sometimes
yeah.
You bring lunch into the office. We're not in the office. Have somebody knock on the door and go, hey, here's a hot pizza. I just thought of that, and I think that would be a terrific idea if more companies did that sort of thing. All right. Interesting research. You can find it all at Indeed.com. Indeed.com. Thanks for joining us today, Scott. Well done.
John, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's Scott Bono over there. Actually, it's funny because WGN Radio rewarded full and part-time employees with T-shirts and fleeces just this week. They sent out a note saying, hey, we know it's crazy, and there was some nice, warm language that went with the email blast that went out. And I popped into Mary, our boss's office, and I said, look at the response. People were just so happy to get that acknowledgement, that personal fun touch. It wasn't necessary. They did it. And I thought, boy, that's the sort of thing that everybody needs to be doing more of. And by the way, Mary, if you want to just bring in a whole bunch of pizzas, that'd be okay with me, too. All right, it's 1245 on WGN. Let's get you more business news now. And here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Illinois Institute of Technology is creating a new technology lab for one of its engineering programs through a contribution from agriculture software company Trimble. The new lab will be for students in Illinois Tech's Department of Civil, Architectural, and Environmental Engineering's Construction Engineering and Management program. Students will learn how to build and transform buildings and living environments into better designed, sustainable civil projects. Forever Car, a Chicago startup that sells extended vehicle service policies, has been purchased by Suna Mutual Group of Madison for an undisclosed price. The company sells four types of vehicle service plans online, which provide automotive protection beyond the manufacturer's powertrain warranty. U.S. Bank is shutting down 12 Chicago area branches. The Minneapolis-based bank is the 10th largest in the area by deposits and the 5th largest in the country. Byline Bank, First Midwest Bank, and Cincinnati-based Fifth Third Bank have also reduced their physical presence in Chicago. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 1251. This is WGN Radio. John Williams here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom Gimbel joins us now from the LaSalle Network. Okay, Tom, it's your turn. Welcome back. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be with you, John.
Let's talk about what LaSalle Network is doing to help veterans find work. Talk a little bit about this network.
Absolutely. So we launched, LaSalle Network is a staffing, recruiting, and culture consulting firm that I started 22 years ago. And for the past few years, we've been looking to partner up with different organizations to help military veterans. And there's some really good options and partners out there, but nothing that I found that was exactly what I wanted. So we decided to launch our own called the LaSalle Veterans Network. And what that is a recruiting and staffing subsidiary of our firm that focuses purely on helping veterans find good jobs post-military.
I saw a statistic, 20 million veterans in the United States. There's 330 million of us. 20 million of us are veterans, and 200,000 people cycle into the private sector every year.
Right. The numbers are astronomical. They're coming out of being adaptable, that they've gone into foreign countries. They're very good at making new friends. They learn skills. Many of them have gone to college on the GI Bill. And we have officers programs and enlisted men and women that we can help find jobs in call centers. We can help them find jobs doing IT work. If they've been working since and they just want a new job and they don't know how to go about that because they glided in after the military, we can also help them in marketing or human resources or accounting and finance. So we're really excited to help the five major branches of the military.
Can you? Is there any way to estimate, though, how transferable, like how many jobs in the military actually have an equivalent in the private sector?
Well, I guess that's kind of like sometimes the salaries won't be equivalent to what it would be if it were in the private sector. But it's like kids coming out of college in the fact of they've taken a lot of liberal arts classes and what do you actually do with that? So if they were actually serving in a feet on the ground role, they have accounting skills, they have logistics skills. There's some that have inventory and supply chain skills. So I think a lot of it's very transferable. And quite frankly, John, they really just need the lane and the vehicle to know how to get there. And so often we don't take people and assimilate them as well to understand. And there's a lot that goes into it from a psychological aspect.
What do you mean by that, psychological aspect?
Meaning you come out of the military where you're wearing the exact same clothes, you're being told what to do, you know who respects whom, you know what's allowed and what's not allowed. You get into the corporate setting and what's water cooler gossip. When someone complains about their boss, it doesn't mean they want to quit. People can do bad things and not lose their job or get thrown in the brig. And how do you adapt? And then you have the issue of, and it's a little easier now with quarantine, but what do I wear? For the past 5 years or 10 years, I've been told what to wear every day, and now I don't. And so do you really understand the EQ, the emotional intelligence, of adapting to a corporate structure versus being in the military?
You've committed to finding jobs for 1,000 veterans next year, right?
Well, we've committed to helping 1,000 veterans find jobs. And the reason I add that technicality is just depending on what the market is and what they're doing, we're going to coach all these people in resume preparation and interview skills and training and get them up to speed. So I can't make a company hire somebody, but what I can do is really facilitate and help these folks find the right avenue and help them help themselves.
Mm. That sounds
yeah,
like
we've committed to helping 1,000 people get jobs.
Yeah, yeah. So, Tom, what do they do? Just go onto your website then, the LaSalleNetwork.com?
Exactly right. At LaSalleNetwork.com, and there's a landing page specifically for veterans to apply. And, again, for no matter the branch, if you're having a hard time finding a job or if you're in a job and you like it but you're looking for something new or different, we're here to help.
I suppose the flip is true, too. If I were an employer and I needed people for X, maybe the LaSalle Network would match me with those people.
We would hope so, John. Believe me, while business is back to pre-COVID levels, and I'm very thankful for that, you always need more clients. But, yes, we do a lot of programs. And between our campus recruiting efforts, our military veteran efforts, and our back-to-work parent programs, we really have a lot of different options for companies and for different types of people in the labor market.
Boy, you think about the churn in the labor market right now. The LaSalleNetwork.com. Okay, Tom Gimbel, well done. Good luck to you, and let us know if we can pass the word along later on as well.
You got it. Stay healthy, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, there he goes.